Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today, Katie Weaver and Andrew Smith tell us about Labor Day in the United States. Then, Katie and I present this week's science report. We close the show by hearing the first part of our Lesson of the Day podcast series with Jill Robbins and Andrew Smith. But first,
Labor Day is a national holiday to celebrate workers in the United States. The holiday, on the first Monday of September, is on September 2nd this year. For Americans, the holiday also informally marks the end of summer. The hot days of summer turn to cooler days ahead. Students are returning to school. Many celebrate the holiday with an outdoor barbecue or one more weekend at the beach.
But Labor Day started with a struggle. On May 1, 1889, workers demonstrated on the streets of Paris, France. The demonstration led to International Labor Day. Most countries in the world, except the United States and Canada, celebrate Labor Day on the 1st of May. The first American Labor Day celebration was held on September 5, 1882, in New York City. About 10,000 workers marched through the streets to show the strength of labor organizations. For many years after that, American workers used the first Monday in September to demand better working conditions and pay. Several U.S. cities and states began to recognize the day as Labor Day. In 1894, President Grover Cleveland signed a bill into law, making it a national holiday.
Music was a part of many Labor Day marches. One American labor song is called Bread and Roses. It is based on a 1911 poem by James Oppenheim. The poem speaks about the women's labor movement. At that time, conditions in factories where many women worked were horrible. A fire at a clothing factory in New York killed 146 people. Most of the victims were immigrant women.
For the three-day Labor Day weekend, many Americans head to airports and highways for end-of-summer escapes. They visit beaches, mountains, or lakes. Some prepare outdoor cookouts for family and friends. The American Automobile Association said, "Americans see the extended Labor Day weekend as an opportunity to say farewell to summer with one final trip." The group said Labor Day weekend travel in the U.S. went up 9% compared to last year.
Robert F. Moss is a barbecue expert and historian. He wrote the book, Barbecue: The History of an American Institution. Moss said barbecue was already an American tradition when the labor movements developed in the late 19th century. He noted that it was a natural way to celebrate as large groups gathered. it still has a lot of that same communal sense, gathering around the grill, eating together, he told the Associated Press.
Americans also have a saying that one should not wear white after Labor Day. That may sound strange, but it is true. Many Americans put away their white clothes on Labor Day and do not wear them again until the following May, after Memorial Day. One reason for the clothing custom relates to the season. In the U.S., the months between June and September are summer. The weather is usually hot, and people wear light-colored clothing to keep cool.
Clothing experts say it likely goes back to the Gilded Age, the same period in the late 1800s that started Labor Day. Wealthy New Yorkers in places such as Newport, Rhode Island, would put away their cool white clothing at the end of the summer, and they returned to the city with darker, heavier clothes for dirt-packed streets. After the pandemic, many businesses and people have turned to more relaxed clothing. So the saying or rule might not be true anymore. But you may want to be careful about wearing white to an American-style Labor Day barbecue. The trouble is not fashion. It is ketchup. If it spills, the popular red tomato sauce can ruin that nice set of white clothes. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Experts and people in the space industry say NASA's decision to send Boeing's Starliner capsule home without astronauts was not unexpected. They also said it follows years of problems with Boeing's space business. Taking NASA astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams to the International Space Station, ISS, was supposed to have been a turning point for Starliner. The operation had suffered years of delays and technical problems. Reuters news agency examined financial securities reports for Boeing and reported on what it had found. Reuters estimated that Starliner has cost Boeing $1.6 billion in cost overruns since 2016. The Starliner spacecraft was launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, on June 5th. Astronauts Wilmore and Williams were to stay at the ISS for about 8 days. But problems with Starliner have extended that NASA mission to 8 months. Starliner's propulsion system failed, and NASA judged the thrusters were not safe to attempt a return to Earth with a crew. Instead, NASA announced that a SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule will return Wilmore and Williams to Earth in early 2025. SpaceX, led by Elon Musk, is the other company that NASA has contracted to develop crewed space vehicles. The June mission was meant to be a final test for NASA to approve Starliner for normal space flights.
Boeing's new leader, Kelly Ortberg, now must decide whether to continue developing the program or sell it. Ortberg also faces problems following failures by the company's airplane manufacturing business. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said he spoke to Ortberg recently. Nelson reported that the talk left him completely sure that Starliner would fly astronauts again. Reuters asked Boeing representatives if the company would stay in the program after Starliner's current operation. A Boeing spokesperson chose not to comment on the question, telling Reuters that the company is centering its attention on getting the spacecraft back safely. "I am not sure the decision will ultimately be NASA's," said Lori Garver. Garver is a former NASA deputy administrator and a main designer of NASA's Commercial Crew program. Ortberg started as Boeing's leader on August 8th. He is trying to persuade Boeing workers, investors, airlines, and the public that safety problems at the company are now under control. Experts say Boeing will probably keep Starliner in operation. They say this is partly because Boeing has experienced similar cost overruns in its defense business. In the future, Starliner could serve customers other than NASA. These could include operators of private space stations meant to replace the ISS after 2030.
NASA considers Boeing an important backup to Musk's SpaceX. Boeing has spent more than half of its $4.5 billion NASA contract, which was given in 2014. Starliner has not yet received certification or final approval for normal use. The contract includes 6 Starliner missions after the capsule is certified. Although the contract has a fixed price, NASA increased its value by $300 million. SpaceX's Crew Dragon was certified in 2020. It has carried out 10 missions for NASA with a crew. The company's first contract was worth $2.6 billion. NASA bought more Crew Dragon missions to take the place of Boeing's delayed missions. As a result, the value of SpaceX's contract rose to $4.9 billion. Boeing may have to carry out the same astronaut mission to the ISS again in order to get NASA certification for the capsule. The company already had to repeat an uncrewed 2022 mission at a cost of nearly $500 million. It has been 5 years since Starliner's first uncrewed test failed because of several important software problems. In 2019, NASA's Inspector General's office estimated both companies' cost per mission. It said Crew Dragon's mission price of carrying one astronaut into space was about $55 million, while Starliner's cost was $90 million.
For years, Boeing's space business has been losing skilled employees. Many former employees joined competitors SpaceX and Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin. 10 people who spoke to Reuters and who worked for Boeing's space business said the company's structure made designing spacecraft more complex than it is for SpaceX. Boeing, in a statement to Reuters, said the company is proud of its Starliner workforce. It also said that it has admitted problems with its workforce and with suppliers when reporting on its earnings to shareholders. Throughout Starliner's development, the propulsion system and sometimes the software have failed. New problems were found just hours before the spacecraft made its first attempt to launch this summer. Helium gas used to pressurize the propellant was leaking through a small opening. NASA considered the leak low risk. The agency permitted Starliner to launch. But officials said the propulsion system had a design vulnerability that Boeing must deal with before its next mission.
The Space Launch System, or SLS, is another problem for Boeing's space division. The SLS is expected to be the launch vehicle for America's program to return to the moon. But the program has faced years of delays and is billions of dollars over budget. NASA's Inspector General's August report said there were deep problems with quality control at Boeing. The report added that Boeing's SLS workforce in Michoud, Louisiana, lacks enough aerospace production experience, training, and instruction. A Boeing representative said the company disagrees with much of the report, including any suggestion that our Michoud workforce is unqualified.
Unlike Starliner, NASA pays the costs of delays and development problems with SLS. Inspector General reports have repeatedly said that the cost overruns are not fully known because NASA does not account for them correctly. NASA is trying to give ownership of SLS to Boeing and co-contractor Northrop Grumman to bring the costs down. However, experts say such a deal is unlikely. Richard Abulafia is an aerospace business advisor. He said Boeing's other businesses are strong, but he wonders about its space division. He thinks Ortberg will negotiate with NASA to make Starliner workable. However, he is not persuaded that the move is the right one. If I were an advisor to Kelly Ortberg, which I'm not, I'd say, for space, well, boss, you might want to consider selling it, Abulafia said. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
My name is Anna Mateo.
And my name is Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
In this part of the Learning English broadcast, you will hear us explain and help you do more with the language from our series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Anna in her work and life in Washington, D.C. Let's hear the rest of Anna's introduction.
I am from a small town. It is nice, but there is no good job for me. Goodbye, small town, and hello, Washington, D.C. I want to learn about Washington. You want to learn English. Let's learn together. Let's learn English.
At the beginning of the series, Anna and the people she meets use short sentences and say each word clearly. As the series continues, the sentences get longer and more advanced.
However, there are things you can learn from the first lessons in the series, even if you are not a beginner. For example, you can learn how to use word stress. Isn't that right, Jill?
That is right.
Jill, you did pronounce that sentence just the way I wanted you to, because today we are listening for the ways native speakers make sure that the things they say are clear. To do that, we simply say a word a bit louder and longer. This is what we call word stress.
Let's listen to Anna meet Pete in Lesson 1 of Let's Learn English.
Hi, are you Anna?
Yes. Hi there. Are you Pete?
I am Pete.
Normally, we simply say I'm instead of I am when we introduce ourselves. Like when I said earlier, I'm Jill Robbins.
That's right. But sometimes we will say I am instead of I'm when we want to be very clear. In the video, this is the first time Pete meets Anna. And to make it clear to beginners of English, he says, I am.
So, should people learning to speak English always say I am instead of I'm?
No. In fact, I'm is much more common. But the idea is that we can choose to separate words and put stress on them to show that they are important and to make things very easy to understand. For example, if I ask Jill if it's fun to teach English, she can say,
it is fun to teach.
You can hear that it is fun to teach sounds a little stronger than it's fun to teach. Now, let's listen to another Let's Learn English example of this stress on small words.
In Lesson 5, Anna and her friend Marcia are visiting a friend's house. Anna thinks the kitchen is beautiful, and Marcia agrees. Listen to how Marcia makes it clear.
Marcia, I am in the kitchen. It is a beautiful kitchen.
It is beautiful.
Marcia makes the word is longer and louder.
It is beautiful.
And I noticed that Anna stressed the word beautiful.
It is a beautiful kitchen.
So we can stress long words or short words. Many times, the short words are forms of the verb be. For example, the three words am, is, are. Let's hear another example. This one from Lesson 7. It is Anna's first day at work, and she is excited to meet people. See if you can notice where Anna adds stress when she speaks.
Are you excited?
Yes, I am excited.
Hi there, I'm Anna.
Hi, Anna, I'm Anne.
Nice to meet you. What are you doing?
I'm writing.
You are writing.
Did you hear the stress on the verb be when Anna said am and are?
I did hear it. Let's play those sentences again for our listeners.
Yes, I am excited. You are writing.
I hope our listeners can hear how we add the stress to these words. And Jill, you just used stress to make it clear to me.
That's true. I did use stress. Instead of saying I heard it, I said I did hear it.
Grammatically, Jill did not have to use the word did because she was not asking a question, nor was she making a statement negative. But native speakers sometimes add the words do or did simply to make their meaning stronger or clearer.
Can you give our listeners another example?
Sure. Instead of just saying, I like to watch football, I can say, I do like to watch football. By adding the word do, I'm simply making my statement a little bit stronger and trying to make it very clear that my statement is, in fact, true.
That means you are adding a little emphasis to your statement.
That's right. Emphasis means extra importance that we add to a statement, activity, or idea. Emphasis is spelled E-M-P-H-A-S-I-S.
Emphasis is the noun form. The verb form is emphasize. It means to add importance or show that something is important.
That's right. But if you don't want to say the word emphasize, you can just use the phrasal verb draw one's attention to something.
Like we want to draw our listeners' attention to the Let's Learn English series of lessons on VOA Learning English.
Exactly. Well, Jill, I think we've emphasized everything we wanted our listeners to learn today. Do you agree?
I do agree.
That's great. You're very agreeable today.
I'm just trying to help everyone learn about word stress.
I think you've been very helpful, and I'm sure our listeners will agree. Be sure to listen next time for more lessons on the Learning English broadcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.